Hi, and welcome to the Modern Romantic Podcast, where we celebrate and inspire romanticism through passionate people doing incredible things. Hi, if you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you come where fashion sits on the Modern Romantic Podcast? Hi, I'm Trey. I'm joined by my co-host, who I can't tell if she is looking at me with pleasure or utter disgust. Hi, it's Emily. Hi, Emily.
Hi, it is Emily Day. No, just kidding.
It is Emily Day.
Actually, I'm really excited that we are doing a show on World Art Day.
Oh,
Today,
yeah.
April 15th, is World Art Day. Hooray! So
Woo!
happy World Art Day, everybody.
Oh, that's awesome. And I'm really happy to be here today with an incredible artist. So, Emily, would you do us the honor of introducing our guest today?
Absolutely not. Yes, today joining us is Alexander Rosenberg, a talented artist, educator, and writer based in Philadelphia. Thank you for joining us, Alexander.
Thanks so much for having me. And I had no idea it was, I just thought it was tax day today. So such a relief to hear that it's something else.
I feel like we could even take this day over so it's not even tax day.
Let's do that. I'll sign that petition.
Yeah, me too, right?
Alex, thank you so much for being on the podcast. And I want to just ask, I was listening to one of your interviews for a couple of years ago, and it was so interesting to hear you talk about how you got into to being a glass artist. You had commented that you kind of fell into it. Can you elaborate for our listening audience how you got started?
Yeah, I think it's I can I mean there's a I can do a very long version. I'll try to do a quick version of it, but I don't think many people at that time, if you were a kid and you thought about what you wanted to be when you grew up, I don't know that glassblower would be on the list, or like art or fine artists working in craft media that's glass, or what, however you wanted to contextualize it. But I knew that I liked art. I knew that I kind of wasn't really doing a terribly good job of hitting other metrics in my early schooling and stuff. I was a little bit, I didn't finish high school. I had some problems with drugs, and I ended up on the West Coast just kind of figuring stuff out. And I lived with a roommate who was taking classes at the local community college. They was doing glass blowing. And I remember specifically, it was really just like the failure of my imagination that caused me to go there. Like, I couldn't imagine what that looked like. And I think I asked the guy about it, and he didn't really do a good job of explaining it. So like, I had to go to figure it out, just to know what it was. I
Cool.
had never, I never thought, and it was kind of unlike me. Like, I don't know why I was signing, so why would I didn't even have a high school diploma. Why was I signing up for a kind of a elective at the community college? But
Yeah.
I thought of glass as this really industrial material. Like, I didn't think of it as something that was manipulated by a human hand, and the thought of that was so kind of exciting to me, I guess. I just wanted to go see what it was.
Yeah. That is fascinating. And especially because it was something that isn't normally you, and somehow it captured you. So what happened when you went?
So I went to this place. It's San Bernardino Valley College, and they had this very, at the time, it was a very like pretty DIY setup. I mean, it's still, most glass studios are kind of built by the people that use them. So it's a very kind of DIY culture, I guess. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I didn't get how anything worked. There wasn't really many people around that like knew what like knew glass blowing to a very high technical ability. But I tried it, and I just really liked it. It was like just a fun thing to do, like a sport or an activity or something like that. I didn't really connect it to art making, but I just tried it and I liked it, and I wanted to keep doing it. So I took the course a few times. I think I would just like not show up for the last class and fail, and then I could take it over again or something like that. And it was really inexpensive to go there. I remember it was like $15 a credit there, so
Wow,
So for like a
nice.
three credit, yeah, so for a three credit course, and this is not, you know, this was not that long ago. It was like the early 2000s. Yeah, so I did that, and then I did end up, you know, getting all my kind of credentials together and going back to the East Coast to go to college. And I did end up going to art school, and there did serendipitously, I still thought at this time I was going to be like a painter or something. And I showed up to art school, and they had a glass program there. So I was like, oh, that's a thing that I like to do. I better go check, see what's going on there. And this was RISD, which is Rhode Island School of Design. And they have kind of an unusual glass program. It's kind of like the material specific sculpture program. And so I started hanging out there, and I saw these students that were like, they were making work out of like melted ice or smoke or like soap bubbles and all these different kind of transparent things that were fragile and like performance. And it just really spoke to me. I was like, oh, people, you can use this stuff to make art. It's not just, you know, it's not just to make like your grandma's like frou-frou candy dish or something like that. Like you can do, there's other things that you can do with this material. And it happened to be the types of things, like the type of topics that I was already kind of interested in, you know, all this stuff about looking at the natural world, like the history of science, you know, trying to preserve or observe things that are like really tiny, really far away, like all this stuff that was kind of exciting to me. It was kind of there already wrapped up in this material. I just had to kind of learn to see it that way.
That's cool because it's a neat marriage of art and science with glass and how you can manipulate it and things like that. I have done a little bit of glass work myself,
Oh
but
wow. So
not
what's
blowing.
the Oh, okay. What's
It's
the
glass
tell me.
fusion.
Cool.
Glass fusion, yeah. So not a ton, but some. And so I have questions because I love glass and I'm fascinated by it. And have you done anything with glass fusion?
I've done it before. Yeah. I mean,
Yeah.
we have the place that I work now, we do like kind of all the processes. I wouldn't say that I'm great at fusing and slumping. I have a thing that I have to do now that I'm a little nervous about that involves some slumping in the kiln.
Okay.
But yeah, but you know, we yeah, I do it. I think there's a friend of mine who's a good artist named Matt Zoss, and
Okay.
he's like pushes fusing to like the kind of technical and conceptual limit. So if you
I
want to see
love
some
that.
where he's
Yeah.
like making stuff that he pulls it out of the kiln and it expands like a like origami or like
Oh,
you know,
wow.
he has these resists so that he stacks the glass and parts of it stick together and parts of it don't stick together, and then he can like inflate them or pull them out. They're like puppets or marionettes or things like that. Very, very cool.
That is cool. Wow, yeah. I will, we'll have to, we'll talk about that later. Go ahead, you're gonna ask something, Trey.
One of the things that I heard you say during a couple of the interviews was that when you see a piece break or with glass because it's so fragile, there's always that like, oh, don't break it. But you said something so incredibly wonderful, and it was something to the effect of, I hate myself for not writing it down, but it was something to the effect of, it's not the fact that something broke, it's the fact that we took time in order to make it. And the fact that we made it is the thing that really matters the most.
Yeah, I believe that. Or like there's a couple of things. I used to have a teacher that would say, the best stuff that was ever made in glass fell on the floor. You know, which is true. Like the best stuff that was ever made in the history of the material, it's not on a shelf in the museum. It's you know, it's shattered on the floor, you know, and that's and I like that. But it is to me like technical glass, it's about you know, it's about kind of like training your body and developing this kind of repertoire that you can do consistently. And every time you're kind of inflicting something on the material, it's kind of inflicting something back on you. And you know, you're kind of manipulating it, but it's you're kind of you're becoming something else. And Yeah, I think the thing that like is in, that we're collecting is like kind of the skill and the kind of fluency in the material and less like the object. You know, like a thing that people ask a lot is like, what's the best thing that you've ever made or something like that? And maybe it's, I don't know, maybe it's like cocky or self-serving, but I like to think that, you know, the best thing that I've made hasn't happened yet. Like the next thing is going to be the best thing that I made, that it's cumulative or
Yeah.
and of course, like I'm in my 40s now, so maybe there is like kind of a peak to the arc or something like that. Because there is some parallel to like athletics. You know, like
Oh,
I was
sure.
having this, I like doing rock climbing as a hobby, and I was kind of having the realization, like, I always think, oh, like in the future, I'll be better at this. That's a sport that like maybe I've been the best that I'll be at that. You know, maybe that's not, you know, me being better isn't the thing that's gonna happen. So
I mean, it's like with sports, they have stats so you can like track your personal best. But with art, it's kind of like maybe you don't push the same limits as you did once upon a time, but you're still maybe doing art. I don't know.
No,
I hate to
I
think
think that's the
about
thing.
it
No, I think that's the thing. Well, I think in my mind sometimes like I separate like the kind of technical virtuosity from like the art make, you know, and you could make like, I mean, somebody that's like can barely do it could make like the better artwork than somebody who's been doing it for like, you know, for 50 years, just by being kind of clever.
Sure.
But then there's these wonderful moments where like that kind of technical virtuosity is kind of synthesized with like a great idea. And oh, there he goes. Easy, buddy.
He had his 2 cents to put in there.
Come on.
That's
Sorry.
okay.
But we, yeah, there's these wonderful moments where those two things are synthesized together, which I think everybody that works in like a very technique-driven material searches for. It's like, you know, when is that stuff right? When is it not right? You know, and I am comforted by the fact, you know, it's true. It is like hard on the body. There probably is going to be a time that I won't be able to do everything that I can do now in terms of just like how I'm moving the material around and moving through space with it. But I like to think that I can still be kind of developing the artistic practice, you know.
Do you like pushing the envelope with your art?
I do. I do. I think, yeah, you know, I want to like, I don't know. It might just be me. I want to make it like faster and more delicate and more risky. And I want to figure out like a better process. I think it's what I like so much about the material is like, nobody ever is like, okay, I got too good at this. It's easy now. Like it's never, it won't, it's, it can't happen. It won't happen. And there's always something to work on.
And there's always little factors of unpredictability.
Yeah. Although like maybe less than like popular TV show would have you believe. I feel like there's a lot of talk on the Blown Away series about like, oh, glass is unpredictable thing, like you can do everything right and suddenly it goes wrong. And like, yeah, maybe sometimes, but
Yeah.
also I do think there's like a lot of stuff that you can just, you know, you can just get be consistent with.
That's true. I mean, I think the same with glass fusion. Like they told everybody that at the beginning too. Like, oh, you can try your best to have that. You can make 20 of the same bowl, let's say, and you're never really gonna have 20 of the same bowl. Well, to some degree, yeah, because glass melts in whatever direction, but you can control it to some degree. The kiln is still going to do what kilns do.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, totally. There, I mean, there's been stuff like, I don't know, when I used to teach in Philadelphia with this shop that was pretty abysmal, and one of the walls was just, it was like a garage basically, and one of the walls was a chain link fence. And that was like you'd be working on something that was really delicate, and then a piece of snow would come in and kind of like land on your thing and it would break, and you'd be like, oh,
Oh
why
no.
are we not indoors, you know? But
What are the chances of a single flake
right,
of
we
snow
have the
coming?
technology, right? Like we have wall technology. We could
Walls,
make
simple
it.
things,
Yeah,
wheels,
I don't know.
walls, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So like for those people who who may the only exposure that they get is hearing about it on these different popular series, and they're maybe kind of afraid to try pushing beyond their limits or taking a risk on something. How do you help motivate those individuals?
Oh man, I'm so happy you asked this because like I have this, I mean, I work at a program that does all different types of educational programming. I used to teach college and I don't do that very much anymore, but we have this kind of a la carte type education where you can take little workshops or you can have like a walk-in experience, all the different class experiences. And most glass studios that are local to anybody listening will have that. They'll have like a you can go in for an hour and somebody will really hold your hand and walk you through the process and you make something and take it home. Here's the thing that's amazing about glass. Every single person sucks at it just the same amount. There's no such thing as like a prodigy who comes in and is like, oh, this is easy. And I find that so, I think it's so like comforting. Like nobody's gonna walk in and be good. Every single person is gonna be bad. And like it's fun to do something without having to be good at it, without having to worry about being good at it. Like just to come in and experience the experience, like the material is like it's what do they say on like the YouTube video? It's like satisfying, when you watch different stuff like move around with viscosity, and it's just like it's cool. My best friend, her uncle came to see, and he was like, he's retired now, but he had been an electrician, and he was just like thought craft. The craft was really beautiful, and we put tweezers in his hand and let him just like pinch the glass and turn it around. And he was like so overjoyed just with the experience of touching it. Like it was so satisfying to him.
That's so cool.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think that's the thing that I hear the most when people are like, oh my God, I'd like to try this, but it looks so hard. It's like, yeah, it's hard to be good at it. It's not hard to just like show up and do like just show up and do it. Like show up and suck like everybody else. Like take the pressure off yourself. And it's fun to like suck with your friends together, and then and then if you really like it, you could do it for like many years and get kind of good at it. But it's like there's really no pressure to be good. You can have just as much fun being bad.
It's really valuable to say that, though. I think that's true for many art forms. There's a first time to even sketch something with a colored pencil, whether you're 4 or 40 or 80, the first one's gonna suck. It's just gonna. So if you're 40 and you pick up a colored pencil for the first time and you sketch a really bad horse, it's gonna be a really bad horse no matter what your age. So you might as well start. And I love the idea of taking the pressure off of perfectionism because I think that fear people have of jumping in, it has something to do with that. Plus, I feel like glass is something like we're all taught not to break glass. We're all taught to be delicate and careful with glass. So I could see that being like an added layer of
I think it's really exciting to people too. Like there's a person who works for me that like she was so we just have piles of like waste stuff at work, and she was like, "Could I have some of the bad stuff?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure." And she like set up this she like staged this thing out in the woods where she could like I don't know, just go out there and smash it with the sledge, just smash all the glass with a sledgehammer, and it's like,
Oh,
it's fine.
brilliant.
You're allowed to. Yeah,
It's
you're totally allowed
therapy.
to. I see one a question
Yes.
in the chat that says, "What is the longest time you've spent creating a piece?" And I think that's I'll try to answer it. There's kind of two ways to answer it. So one is like one of the things about making glass in the hot shop and the hot process is you can't really put it down or take a break. So, what's the longest time I worked with something? I don't know, maybe like 5 or 6 hours or something like that. That's, and that's a lot. It's like doing a surgery or something like
Yeah.
that, except it's hot and it's heavy and stuff like that. But I honestly, like, I don't love to work on stuff for that long. If I have to, if there's something that has like a zillion different colors or a zillion different parts, like it can kind of take a long time. But what feels good to me is when I can kind of work through parts really quickly. And so I tend to kind of, I think, design or like orient the you know, the work that I'm trying to do to meet that. That being said, sometimes I have these projects that span a much longer time, like in the studio or coming together, bits and pieces, and I have stuff that I've worked on for, you know, for years. It's, I mean, it's kind of the thing of being this, an artist that's not necessarily like working towards like a gallery show all the time or like a commission. Like when I can work or at my own pace, sometimes I just keep going, without necessarily a end goal.
Right. And Sandra had another question that I actually thought of as well. And that is, how do you adapt to the heat for that length of time? Is that difficult? Or are you just used to it now?
I don't think I'm used to it. I think actually the older I get, the less tolerant I am. And the more I'm affected by like the different, like you can see, I could, if I make the same thing in August and then I make it in, you know, December, it's like way better. The December one is way better than the August one. But you know, I don't know. I mean, I think I'm fortunate right now that I don't like have to blow glass like every single day. You know, I can kind of be a little bit more flexible with my schedule. So I try to work around, you know, like the people that I work with don't love this quality about me, but I do love to work super early in the morning when it's really hot out. And I like to, you know, drink a lot of water, and I like to, we have this beautiful studio that has these like louvers, like the walls just kind of flip open at the top and just get and we get the air coming in. And I mean, don't get me wrong, it's South Jersey, it's still miserable, you know, it's like a swamp, but we do our best to kind of and we have like, you know, like ice pops in the fridge, you know, just like all lots of you know, canned beverages and things like that. So, you know, we do our best to try to make it tolerable, but it is, you know, it's hard. It's not the most comfortable place to be. And there are times where I'm like, man, why didn't I just become an accountant or something like that? Right. You know, where I can sit in an air conditioned office, maybe listen to the radio. I don't know.
Then it would be World Tax Day and not World Art Day for you.
That's true. I know. And I would be celebrating.
I mean, I think that's a really good perspective of, I think we all have that frustration of getting to the point of, oh, why didn't I do this? But then the world wouldn't have the beautiful art that it currently has in it. And I feel like no matter the medium, you're always telling a story with something. So at our core, I believe that every human is a storyteller. So if you don't tell your stories, how are they going to get out? So why not take the risk and tell them?
I mean, glass is so weird because like in an odd way, like you don't really need human glass blowers right now. Like it's a bit archaic. I mean, that's not, there are probably actually a lot of people that would chime in and say like, oh, you know, like, I mean, for example, like scientific glass industry, like all of these huge technological leaps around like the pandemic, for example, like the way that the vaccines were manufactured and the volumes that there were dependent on like individual people being able to figure out how to make stuff on kind of a certain scale or especially, but like in the more kind of general sense, like, do you need me to make like a fancy wine glass? Not really, like there's not. And, but then there's another part of that, like of that kind of archaicness or like obsoleteness that makes it a little bit more poetic. Like I kind of like to do something, you know, purely for the love of it or for the dedication to it, not because like, you know, there's a giant international need for paperweights or something like that. Yeah. You know?
Well, it's just like how there are artists out there, and I see this, I don't know if it's gaining popularity or if I just think I see it gaining popularity, but there are artists out there that just hand draw maps on parchment because it's cool. Not because there's a need for hand drawn maps. Right. We have GPSs now, but it's the art of that form. And it's, it's still art and people still love it and it's still really cool and still tells a story, like Trey said. So
yeah, and I think there's also this mixture of like, you know, there's making stuff, you know, for an audience, which I do, and there's also like this kind of love of the process, which I'm fortunate, like those two things kind of can come together for me a little bit. But you know, there's this thing, I've talked about this in other interviews, but like I like to do things that put me in this state called flow. You guys ever hear about that or talk about that before?
Yep.
So there's a good book about it by this interesting thinker named Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi.
Okay.
And he taught, I won't ask you to repeat the name.
Yeah, I was like, it's a very, very
hard name to say. But he kind of talks, he's got like a TED talk and stuff too, but he talks about this idea of flow state as this, it's got to be this right combination of demanding a lot of you, but not to the point, like right at the edge of your ability, but not to the point that it's like past your ability. So it's frustrating or it feels like you kind of can't do it. You know, something that you're like pretty good at, and something that demands like a high level of concentration and kind of engagement. So people that get this a lot are like, you know, professional chefs, maybe like musicians, athletes, like surgeons, people that are really kind of doing hand-eye stuff in a big way. And what he says is that like people, and what my experience is like doing this thing, you like lose track of time, you don't feel pain, you kind of like lose touch being in your physical body. You know, you don't really like remember a ton, you know, there's not really a lot of feeling happening in the actual moment. Yeah, that's nice job.
Wow, Trey.
That was a Google search.
Awesome.
And it was, did you mean this gentleman?
Right. Yeah.
Google's making fun of you now.
thank you, Google. But anyway, bottom line, it's like I'm doing a bad job of, you know, talking about this guy who's done very, very thorough research on this. But the bottom line is people who are in this a lot have a good life. They report, you know, being people that enjoy their lives, which is another good reason to do glass or to do, you know, or to do other stuff that like requires a lot of focus and you might not be good at immediately, but because, you know, it might, having that like singular attention for me is really, it's just very pleasurable. It like lets me be in another place.
Like I get that in a different medium. I don't work with glass, but I do work with fabric, and there have been days that I will sew for literal hours because I get into such a groove with things. Mm. And then my needle will fumble and it just creates like a knot of threads on my piece, and I've got to go unstitch the thing. But then I go right back to sewing, and it's, I can just watch the fabric move for hours upon a day. It's really therapeutic sometimes.
Yeah, I think that's I think that's really, really real. And it to me, it makes me think that people are kind of wired to make stuff, you know, that it's kind of a natural thing for humans to do.
I would agree. Yeah.
I was thinking of a question. I was going to think out loud. Go for it.
One question from the chat is, I'd love to know what the largest piece you've ever made is and what was the most challenging?
Okay. Well, it happens that right now I'm kind of trying to make a very big thing. I like to do these different, I like take on kind of commissions and things at work a lot. It's something I kind of used to do individually, and now I have this kind of institution behind me, which makes it even more fun to do.
Yeah.
And like one of the things that makes me decide like whether or not I want to do it is like, if it seems really hard, there's a part of me that like just wants to try. So I agreed to there's a clockmaker. I'm kind of connected to the clock and watch world through a couple of friends.
Yeah.
And there's a clockmaker who I think is really talented and amazing and super knowledgeable. And he's making this very tall freestanding clock. And they typically come under a glass bell jar, but it's kind of flattened. So
Okay.
And they used to be something that were produced in a more of a kind of factory process with a mold, and made in kind of a shot where you can drop the glass down into the floor.
Okay.
But I agreed for this client to try to make two of them that were taller than 30 inches, and then they're about 18 inches wide. And so that doesn't seem it doesn't seem that big if you just think about it as an object, but when you think about it as something that you have to carry on the end of the pipe and it's hot and blah blah blah, it presents a lot of challenges for me. It's not, you know, there are people who really, really make giant stuff all the time. So I'm sure I could call one of them and they would probably be able to do this no problem. But for me, it's kind of about at the edge of my ability. So I got a team. I have a team of four people helping me. We gather kind of the largest size gather we can get out of the furnace. And then we did, I did end up fabricating a mold as part of the process. And we blow into the mold and we kind of slide it around. It gets really heavy. But that's, to me, part of the fun of that challenge is not just like making the object, but it's kind of designing the process with a team of people. So like everybody in the person has something they're supposed to do, and we try to tune it. We try to get each person like more and more dialed into, you know, being in the place that they need to be right at the time, and everybody knows what to do. It's
Yeah.
like a little, it's kind of like conducting.
Yeah.
And it's really fun. And especially to like watch the team, you know, over the course of a couple of days, watch the team like kind of figure it out and nail it. So I don't know if that's the biggest thing I ever made, but it's a big thing that I'm working on now. And it's taking a lot of resources. And then teeny tiny glass is like, you know, there's different glass processes. I wish I was better at flame working glass or kind of scientific glass working, which is a lot of times with borosilicate glass, which is a different material. But you can really make teeny, teeny, tiny stuff using the bench burner torches and the small glass. And not me, but I have a there's a friend of mine named Kiva Ford, who's a foreman of a scientific glass. He's an artist, but he's also a foreman of a scientific glass shop at Notre Dame. And he just has to do like what the scientists need him to do, you know. So sometimes he'll tell these stories. He gives this great lecture about scientific glass projects, and he talked about one making these teeny tiny little prisms, you know, that were like 1 millimeter tall by, and he has to put them on the flat lap and grind it perfectly flat. And then of course he ends the description. He's like, and you know, the measurements have to be exactly perfect or the lasers don't work and the scientists can't do their research. And I'm like, man,
Wow.
I have never ended a sentence that way. You know, never have I said, you know, or the lasers don't work and the scientists can't do their research about something that I have to do. So I think that's pretty cool. But
Yeah.
yeah, point is like you can make stuff really tiny. You can make stuff really tiny.
Sure.
That's incredible. I would have never thought that that would have been something that had like there was a designation for art to be involved with science, but it makes sense. That is really cool.
Yeah, there's whole, I mean, it's less and less so, but like there are people employed by like science institutions that are like scientific glassblowers, and their job is to fabricate like the stuff that they need to do their research. There's a friend of mine who he's retired from that life, but his name is Mike Sousa, and he used to be the scientific glassblower at Princeton, and he showed me crazy stuff. Probably some of it's like, you know, secret, top secret, whatever, but he showed me a glass. It sounds like they sound like magic. He showed me this glass that the surface was treated in such a way that it could barely reflect any light. So if you held it up, you couldn't touch that surface because it was such a delicate surface. It looked like nothing. You know, like glass tells you what it is by kind of reflecting or little
Yeah.
light spots on it. And it
Sure.
didn't do that. So it just looked like nothing. You could see the edge of it. It was like the emperor's new clothes. You know, he could have just been holding his hands up with his fingers
Wow.
apart. of course, this incredibly, incredibly expensive thing, you know, and it was for this optical experiment. You can't touch it. He showed me glass that melts when you hold a lighter to it, like a Bic lighter, that, you know, just had this very, very low melting point. A bunch of other stuff too. But there's, yeah, there's all this crazy stuff. And it's so interesting that he's this guy with this very kind of like, kind of working class background. You know, he didn't like go study physics or whatever, but he knows it just by working, you know, by working in the labs with the people that do. He has this really sophisticated working under. I think it was like his dad was like, you know, you better either go get a job as a scientific glass blower or like, you know, go to jail or something like that.
Yeah. These are your choices.
Yeah, I know. Chose glass blowing. Never looked back. Yeah.
So speaking of this science part, you have a video on your Instagram with a glass. It looks like a bubble or a ball. I don't know because you can't see the whole thing, but you see the top and you can see that it's very thin because a little bit has dented in a little, and you're touching it and it's moving and it's not breaking.
Yeah. Yeah.
What in the world? I didn't even know that was possible until I saw that video.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, those are the moments that are really exciting to me, especially when I just like want to go, like when I'm thinking about what to make as an artwork. You know, some of the beautiful thing about having like a material as part of a studio practice is like, I don't really have to come up with a thing to make, you know, like I have a time to go work, I go be in the shop, I go make some stuff, and I'm going to kind of discover something just by being around, you know, just by being around it. Sometimes it's like, you know, the way the light moves through something in the space, or the way that like, you know, when the hot stuff is going, it creates like a little visual distortion. There are these like little moments that you see just by spending a lot of time with the material that I think like inform a practice in a way that can make art that's you know, exciting to everybody. And one of the things that's unusual about glass is it's perfectly elastic. So what it means is that any piece of glass, you can bend it as much as it will bend, and it will always return perfectly to the shape that it was before. And when you think about other materials, like you think about metal, it's not really like that, right? Like you bend a piece of metal, it's kind of, it has a memory. It keeps that fold in it. Or, you know, even fiber materials, you know, the fibers wear away, they get degraded by being bent and moving.
Yeah.
And they don't always return to the simple, to the same shape. So
like the hem of your jeans. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. They kind of want to remember what you've done to them and kind of stay in that position. And glass, you know, glass is perfectly elastic. So when it gets to that super, super, super paper thin version of itself, it's amazing to watch how much you can actually move it and how much it changes with like sound or just, you know, the ambient stuff going on in the room. It's a way to really like map a lot of different things with that kind of level of delicateness.
Yeah.
Delicato.
I'm intrigued by the like, sorry, I'm gonna back up here. So I get in like cooking that sound can sometimes influence things like souffles. You don't want to have loud noises, or you don't want to open the oven before it's completely done, that way it can impact it.
Aww.
And you said that like and you said that sound can sometimes influence that. How do those different mediums kind of impact us? Can you talk through like some of the changes that'll make in the glass?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much. Oh, I'm so glad we're talking about this. There's so much to say about sound specifically in glass. You know, when it's molten and when it's solidified. There's this really great property of glass. I mean, I think a lot of materials are affected by harmonic resonance, but glass in particular is known for it. You know, you can imagine, or you can think of like a meme almost of an opera singer going and a glass breaks, or like a cartoon thing. But it's true. It's got this amazing property. And I think glass has and this is maybe where I'm at the limits of kind of like what my actual scientific understanding is, but I think glass tends to have a relatively specific harmonic resonance, so like you can attack, like really get it to react with a single tone if it's like kind of a thin piece of glass. And I've done this before, just like with speaker, not with my voice, but with speakers, where you can kind of record, you know, you can hit the glass and record that tone and then play it back at a really loud speaker. And then if you look at the glass under the strobe, it's moving. It starts to flex and, you know, like a round lip of a glass turns oval and back again and oval and back again. And it gets more and more and more until it tears itself apart. And there's a really great, I mean, it's actually sad, but there's a great video from the early 20th century of the Tacoma Narrows Bridge doing this with the wind. You know what I'm talking about?
I do. And yeah, it's wild.
Absolutely insane, right? It's like you wouldn't think that the bridge could even move that much before tearing apart. It's like it's torquing itself, looking, it's like turning into a
It
DNA
looks impossible.
Twisting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Twisting and vibrating. It's just from the wind, like matching the frequency of the bridge perfectly. And I was talking to somebody about this recently, and they were in a marching band, and when they march over the bridge, they have to not match their steps to avoid creating harmonic resonance and creating like a similar experience. But anyway, but to the discussion about I know, can you imagine if you were like just all marching, and then you just torque the bridge apart?
Especially because you'd find out by accident, probably.
You'd find out, yeah, exactly. You'd be like, oh, we're such a good band.
That?
We're so
Why
in
are
step
we in
with
the
each
air
other.
Now?
And,
right.
You know, and, but more to the topic, you know, one of the things about the glass, especially when working with molten glass. Oh, and I'm seeing a lot of good stuff in the comments that we will address momentarily.
Yes.
It's very reactive. Like the glass is solidifying from molten to solid in the moment and kind of being affected by whatever's around it and capturing it in that moment and kind of making a recording of it. Like I like to think of glass blowing is a recording of movement, right? Like the way that I'm moving through space is getting caught in the glass as it's kind of solidifying in the air. And it's forever a record of this, which is a cool thing about bad glass blowing, because you'll make this thing that you cannot repeat. Like I have some of the early ones, and there's this like extreme level of messed upness that like, if you gave it to the best glass blower in the world and said, make this again, you know, they couldn't do it. But I think the same thing is true with sound. And there are people, I was actually with a friend and colleague today, Jocelyn Prince, who she was inviting like opera singers and musicians to like play or scream into these tubes, like into the glass and get this visual record of that on the surface of what she was making, you know, by it happening in that moment.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow, I love it.
I'm about this.
It's just, I think there's so much, and that's why, you know, in a weird way, that's kind of like why glass, you know, comes up so much in the history of science, is it's like trying to figure out ways to visualize invisible things. Like this is always ends up being kind of the medium for it, you know. We should ask.
Oh, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I want to know, because we were talking about this resonance. I want to know Trey, because Trey has done some opera singing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really? What? Alto?
I'm actually a Heldon Soubrette bass.
Amazing. Tenor.
No, bass.
Mm.
What about you?
What opera do you sing?
Well, okay, here's a weird thing about me is one of my first art jobs was I was doing opera research for this artist, and we were trying to find the highest sopranos and lowest basses from every year in the Metropolitan Opera from 1919 to 1979 and find a recording of each one, you know, kind of performing maybe like the lowest note that they would have performed that year. So that's so exciting that you're a bass. I have many, many good recordings of your colleagues doing their thing.
Excellent. Very happy.
Have you ever broken a glass?
Have I?
No.
Oh, no, has Trey.
Have you ever broken glass?
I was like, I don't even.
That's probably a question you never get asked.
but not with my voice.
With my voice, no. Being a klutz, yes.
But is that definitely, like, that's like a higher pitch anyway, isn't it? To do that? To
well, I think it just has to do with, like, the shape of the thing, you know? So, like, what, you know, my mind would want to think, like, sure, what is the glass that would be perfect to for Trey to break with his voice? It would probably be big. It would probably be big and kind of an unusual shape. But, you know, there's a lot of lore about it. Apparently, Pavarotti always bragged that he could break a glass with his unamplified voice, but never demonstrated it. And we know Ella Fitzgerald did, you know, it was televised in a commercial, but she was using a microphone and an amplifier, not her voice. And that, I think singers are just like better now, you know, everybody can go to school to be an opera singer now. It's not just like, you know, the luck of the draw. And I think there's a lot of people now that can break a glass, usually sopranos that can break a glass with their unamplified voice. I bet Maria Callas could have done it. She was she went full on.
Probably. To that end, yeah, generally bassists are just the people that are standing in the back like, meh, we get paid to be here. It was a source of contention, like during my master's program, that all the sopranos would admit to trying it at some point in their house.
That's what they do, like, yeah. Right. No. Behind closed doors.
They're just pissing off their neighbors.
There were actually two coloratura sopranos, and we tried to get them to do it live for us, and they were just like, it's not a thing. This is not a thing.
See, what I would say is they don't have the right glass. Maybe, you know, if there are, if maybe in our listener base, if there's sopranos out there that want to collaborate on a glass breaking situation, hit me up.
Yes. And we'll make sure that even if you email us, we will give your contact information to Alex here so that you two can get in touch.
We probably have a couple out there, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope so.
That would be cool. I'd want to know the results of this.
Yeah, I think my favorite like organic crossovers are when somebody is like, you know, like, hey, I'm a smell scientist. Like, do you want to work on something weird together? And I'm like, yes, I do.
That's awesome.
Work on some smelly stuff with you.
What is the most interesting collaboration that you've ever been offered?
So that is a well-timed question. I am leaving in less than 2 weeks to go to the Arctic Circle on a sailing ship to do a collaborative project with a friend of mine, and we're like flying a drone and trying to make a 3D scan of a glacier, and I'm gonna try to like have it turned into this like a press mold that works with this like 19th century technology called a sidearm press, and to be able to press these little glaciers out of glass and collect these like tardigrades from the ice and observe them. I got this special microscope donated for the project that I can make videos of. Do you guys know tardigrades? They're very like online thing. They're like water bears. They're these mini animals that look like terrifying creatures from space with eight legs and a round mouth full of razor sharp teeth, and anyway, they're these teeny little guys, and they're going to perform we have to do reaction bit first look tardigrade reaction videos.
That's great. We should. That was the first one right there. Trey clearly has never seen one before.
No, thank you. I don't wish to see that again.
Really? Yeah, some people think they're cute. I mean, probably they're not looking at real ones or their mouths, but...
The real ones, I think a lot of those images are kind of like doctored a little to make them look, I think, or they're like scanning electron ones. Like in the microscope that I'm using, they look like just kind of these translucent, you know, they're very flat. You can see through them, and they're just little guys hanging out in the moss and the dirt and water. And but they can survive all of these extreme climates. And my collaborator and I, her name's Sarah Anderson, we're trying to work on this project, this kind of sprawling project that's like about you know, kind of climate change and like, you know, what creatures can kind of survive the conditions that we're kind of looking at in the near future.
Fascinating. Fascinating.
But yeah, we get to go to the Arctic, which is awesome and a little bit scary, and very excited by that. So.
Yeah. I hope you get to post some pictures and talk about that.
We're going to, there's no cell service in the Arctic. We'll get a lot of content, and then yeah, we'll post it when we come back. And we have to a little bit, some of our sponsors want us to do like online promo stuff, so that's what we'll do.
Of course. So the chat has a few things in it that I don't want to miss. One of them is how is Tuna? He is epic.
Okay, so Tuna is epic. Tuna is my cat who's almost 20 years old, completely blind, and cannot be killed by conventional weapons. So he will he will probably outlive all of us. He's, I don't know, I admire him a lot, and yeah, he's just like, he hangs out on a little soft nest in front of the heater, and he likes food, and I don't know, we could all aspire to be like Tuna.
What a life. So,
yeah,
he's got his awesome own band that will also last forever called Tuna and the Tardigrades.
Wow, that's a you know what, if you don't start that band, maybe I will.
Go for it, you're welcome to use that.
Thank you.
I feel like it's perfect for him.
Yeah. He's a great performer. He's very vocal. I think he could really do it. So yeah, that's Tuna. He's awesome. And then let's see what else. I'm seeing also, is there an artist that you would love to meet, whether in your medium or another? I mean, weird thing about glass is like, it's pretty accessible. I feel like I know everybody. I feel like I know every person. I feel like I've gotten to meet every person that I admire in glass, which is awesome.
That's
kind of
really great.
Yeah. It's kind of what, maybe not everyone that I admire, but like I tend to get to cross paths with people, and it's great. Like I was at this thing in, Vermont. I was doing a demonstration, and and just didn't want to not respond to that.
That was great. It's kind.
I was doing a demonstration in Vermont, and a bunch of people came out, and one of them was like an artist who I knew of, and I knew his work and everything like that. And he came up and introduced himself to me. I was like, yeah, I know who you are. Come on. Like, what are you? But it's like that, you know? And it's, yeah, I don't know. So that's a pretty cool thing about glass, especially like as I start going around, I meet everybody, and they're almost all the way, like really nice and generous people. And they'll say, hey, come stay with me and watch the eclipse. Like that's what we did in
that's so cool.
In Vermont. Hanging out in a new friend's hot tub under the path of totality with welding helmets on.
That's one way to do it. Yeah.
I think it's the most fashionable
way.
Yeah. Honestly awesome and great experience. But you know, it's interesting. I think there's a weird thing about meeting famous artists, and sometimes, you know, there are a few very famous artists that I, you know, that I do know or that I've gotten to meet, and that's awesome. And there's some artists that like I've always wanted to meet, and then I meet them and I'm like, oh, I kind of wish I I kind of wish I didn't know the. I think it was I was so much more excited by your work before I knew you.
We've heard
Which,
this.
you know, yeah, I don't know, which I mean, maybe it's that thing of like don't meet your heroes or something like that. But there's a lot of people that I really love and admire that like have just been like the guy that I did the opera research for. He's an artist named Paul Etienne Lincoln, and he's just a really, really awesome artist and not terribly well known, I think, on like a kind of on an everyday level, you know. And he's just a generous person that's like in my life. He kind of took me in and let me work for him. I like showed up at his door when I was like 22 and was like, "Hey, I want to be your studio assistant." He was like, I don't need a studio assistant. Like, I don't know what I would have you do." And then, you know, like 4 years later, I was really, you know, pretty integrated into his kind of studio work. But it ended up the thing that he needed was like research. Like, I thought I was going to go there and learn to make stuff, and it turned out what he needed was somebody who was good at like tracking stuff down in an archive, and it turned out that was something I was good at. So, and there's a bunch of people like that, you know, kind of scattered throughout my professional life that in some way or another I've had this professional connection that have been generous to me and that have kind of let me like learn stuff kind of on their dime, you know, to help them make their work. Another guy called Bruce Chow, he was like a glass person that kind of worked in a lot of different materials too. He trained me to be a professional tree climber for him, which was awesome. And
What?
yeah, and that was we were making artwork in the trees for a couple of years. That was really great. And you
Not a
know,
common art form.
no, it's great. So I don't know. So like, yeah, that's a really long-winded response to like, I'm not really sure if there's a person. I guess maybe I would want to meet somebody. I used to be obsessed with like Red Grooms when I was a kid. I would maybe have loved to meet him or something, and or you know, like I maybe Vito Acconci. I know people have met him before. He's kind of or Gordon Matta-Clark if he was alive, that would be awesome. But I feel like I have access to some other people like in that orbit that are you know, I'm fortunate to have like a little bit of a relationship with Joan Jonas, and you know, she's very much like of that world, that like kind of conceptual art from the 60s and 70s in New York.
Yeah, we've heard the don't meet your heroes thing, and we have tried to do that anyway. And we have done that a few times as well. It's always been interesting. Go ahead, Trey.
Like a track record with that for meeting people.
Yeah.
And so I think it's still good to meet them regardless of the outcome, because it still gives you a different perspective on who they are as a person. The one thing I think that I am latching onto from your answer is how accessible glass is as an art form. And I kind of I was thinking back to your Wheaton Arts, where there were these great images of people just kind of walking through the studio, and they would like stop and watch someone at work, like working the wheel itself. So for me, I love when the people up to eyeing people, it's like you both get and can be have art form. But if how can people find out about different like either glass blowing or glass events or glass artists? What are some ways that you would recommend that people go out and explore the world of glass?
That's a great that's an awesome question to ask. And I guess yeah, I should be promoting my work more. I do. I'm glad you
Yeah.
said anyway. So I work at a place called Wheaton Arts where I'm kind of running the glass studio area there. And that's the place that's open to the public. So if people are in the, you know, Philadelphia, South Jersey area and you want to come say hi or see some glass blowing, see me do glass blowing, see somebody else do glass blowing, that's a good thing that you can come do. We're open Thursday through Sunday. And I'm not there every single one of those days, but I'm often working on the floor on like Thursday afternoons and
Is
stuff
it
like
like a
that.
maker space or?
It's kind of all that. Like, it's the unusual thing about our studio is it's just kind of open to the public like an attraction. So like,
Oh, okay.
if you come, you can walk around and just like walk in and see people working. Like we have a bunch of staff and we make production stuff and or
Okay.
work on whatever the studio project is. But yeah, you can, if you're a professional, you can rent time. If you're interested in learning, we have classes, everything from like a half hour make your own experience to like multiple week, over and over again, kind of more kind of skill developing type class. Well, I did a bad job explaining it. Like what you would take in a college class or
Sure.
something like that.
I get it.
So lots of different ways to kind of experience class there. But what I would say is like any place that you are, probably in the United States, there's probably somebody with a independent studio not too far away from you. And the studio is probably offering similar things, like they're offering like make your own experiences. They're offering like, come in and watch us make a thing. I mean, so if you just Google like the name of your city and glass studio, you'll probably find something. And at the very least, it's a nice, nice way to shop, get something that somebody made, that you could talk to. But it's also a great way to, there's a lot of ways to access this, the world, I think the time is very valuable to be with the material. It's costly. Like you could do it, if you were like a tech startup person, you could just like finance it. But if you're maybe not wealthy, you could show up and ask if you could like volunteer in exchange for some time. There's a lot of ways. I'm so fortunate that I've rarely had to pay to access the material, and I think that's why I've been fortunate to be able to get a little bit better at it, just because I've had a lot of access to it that I haven't had to pay for.
And I'll give you a pro tip to our audience. If you can't find a glass studio specifically, and there isn't one within a short distance from you, and you can find maybe a maker space, you could always mention it to the maker space that that's an interest of yours, because it could be that they just have a list and you're the last name on it that makes them move forward with it, their idea to include that in their maker space. So, it's worth it to speak up and say, hey, I have an interest in this if you're ever thinking about offering it. I think that's really valuable too. So I would say speak up if there isn't one near you.
Absolutely. That's a great call out. And especially on World Art Day, why not pick up a new hobby and a very accessible hobby and blow some glass or get involved with some type of glass art?
And if you're one of those tech people who has some investable money that you would like to send our way or to Alexander, you can contact us at sponsor us. We love you at themodrom.com.
Please sponsor us. We love you at themodrom.com. Thank you.
And if you want to sponsor Tuna and the Tardigrades, the band, you can also. I'm just kidding.
I actually will accept cash or checks made out to Tuna. He yeah.
Valid.
And he's worth he's you know he's here ready to cash those checks, so.
Willing and able.
So Alex, we have a couple of questions that we ask everybody on our podcast towards the end of the episode. I want to make sure that we ask that here before we part. The first is we want to make sure that our listening audience can stay in touch with you and kind of keep updates, especially with your exciting trip up to the Arctic Circle. Where are some places that our listening audience can find and stay in touch with you?
Thank you for asking. I have a woefully out of date website, which hopefully will, after this trip, maybe I'll try to update it a little bit. It's just alexanderrosenberg.com or alexanderrosenberg.net will get you to the same place. It's just my name, Rosenberg. And then on Instagram, it's at Rosenberg Alexander, and that seems to be the place where I'm the most active these days. So if you want to, if you want to see pictures of my cat, occasionally glass blowing content, maybe a joke. Those are good. That's a good place to see those things.
Solid reasons to go follow Alexander.
And the last question I'll ask, if someone is getting into glass for the first time or has an interest in it, what advice would you give to that first time glass blower?
That's a really good thing to ask. And, you know, we talked a little bit about like whether or not to try to be good at it. and if the thing that you want is to be good at it, if you want to have a career in it and that it's the kind of career that you want to have a great technical skill, I think it's really important to figure out ways to get a lot of time with the material. And that's a hard thing. Like we were saying before, that could mean that like if you're wealthy, maybe it's not that hard. But if you're not, it's a bit of a sacrifice. And what I think is something that comes up a lot, especially with like kind of younger artists that I work with or that I know, is they wanna be making money off the work right away. And I understand that, like, money's awesome. I like it. I have a little bit. It's in a jar under my bed. I wish there was more. But I think of the early years of glass working as like an investment in your future. So it's like, you know, if you're a doctor, you have to spend a lot of money. Like, there's a lot of time going to school, not making money. And then eventually, you know, eventually you get kind of paid a lot. And I think about that as like the development of craft skill. Like, you can go out there and make blue pumpkins and like people will buy them, but making the blue pumpkins isn't going to make you get better at the stuff. So if there's a way, and I know this maybe comes from a place of privilege, but like if there's a way that you can kind of spend a little bit of time, you know, challenging yourself, dropping stuff on the floor, or, you know, where it doesn't have to come out perfect right away, that eventually results in like having a really marketable skill. Because if you do end up with somebody who's like got, you know, pretty good glass chops, you're of a pretty small community. So I don't know. That's what I think. Somebody would probably disagree with me, but I think it's worth it to kind of invest in your future self by maybe not making as much money now.
Sorry, Trey.
No, go for it. You spoke first.
I think that's solid. Also, because not everybody gets into art forms for monetary reasons anyway. So maybe it's just interesting to them or something that they want to do because they want to expand their horizon somehow. So that money wouldn't necessarily be the reason to dive into any art form. So I think that would be solid for sure. Whether you're trying to get into it as a career or not.
There was a time where glass was one of the more, you know, when handmade glass was like one of the more valuable objects in the world, you know, Cristallo. So maybe it can be that way again.
I hope so. I really do.
Well, Alex, I really have to say this has been a very enlightening hour with you, and I really appreciate the time and sharing your insights with us. I'm also very intrigued, and now I have to go find friends who are willing to sit with a glass blower and sing into it so that it can be resonating at their specific frequency.
Yeah.
I will have to do what?
Get video.
Yeah, of course.
We want to see.
but beyond that, I really appreciate you sharing your time and your artistry with us. So thank you so much for being on the podcast with us here today.
It's been an honor and a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
As we close this episode out, this episode, along with probably every episode for now and forever, is dedicated to Joe Capone, our moderator, fellow comedian, passionate encourager, and greatly missed friend. You can find us pretty much wherever you tune into podcasts. Follow us on social media under Modern Romantic for updates, announcements, and more. Thanks, everybody, and go blow some glass today on World Art Day. That sounds really awful. I am so sorry. Wow.
Right. That's one of the, you know, the alternative titles for Blown Away, like, you know, go blow, or
I'm gonna say future
remember not to suck. That's the one that everybody likes.
Future Emily, for the audio of this, please cut that out.
I'm never cutting that out.
All right, good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.